What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to AmericaTrendsPodcast.com. John Krofcik.
How are you, sir?
It's not me. I'm Larry Rifkin. He's John Krofcik.
That's me, yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm Rappaport. You're Sam.
You're getting a little confused there.
I know, absolutely. Well, I'm a little nervous. And wouldn't you be if, in fact, you were about ready to talk to someone you voted for president of the United States?
Yeah, that's pretty neat. I've never talked to anybody I've tried to elect for president of the United States.
Yeah, well, they embarrassed you about 10 minutes into their administration. But, no, actually, when I saw that this gentleman was going to be a registered write-in candidate, and I had interviewed him so many times in the past and been so impressed because he considers himself to be a liberal economist. And yet, as a liberal economist, you would think, well, does he really care about debt and deficits? And he's basically saying, John, that we are choking another generation.
I agree.
With the debt that we're leaving them. And he says to us that it's a pittance. You know the $20 trillion that everybody talks about,
yep,
that America is in debt? $20
trillion? Yep.
Well, you know what he says?
$50 trillion.
No.
No.
Keep going.
No. $100 trillion.
No. Much, much higher than that. No, he talks about a fiscal gap. And what he's saying is that when you look at the numbers the government gives us, that's basically the public debt that we have. So you buy,
okay,
a treasury and we have,
right,
a debt.
Right, right. Okay.
But it doesn't include all of the obligations that we have to this generation born. So, for example, if you looked at all the tax receipts over the horizon and all the obligations in terms of Medicare and Social Security, if you looked at the fiscal gap, if nothing changed, we would be owing $200 trillion.
Wow.
A little bit more.
Wow.
A skosh more than that. Can you imagine? And he's a liberal economist, and he's been getting so many other economists to sign on to this concern, and they put full-page ads in the New York Times. And you know what happens, John, as a result of all that?
What?
Nothing.
I know. I knew
nothing.
That was coming. I don't understand it, because everybody talks a good game when they're running for office, and then zero, zip, zilch. Nothing.
But you know the idea that you can hold two contradictory views at the same time? Well, what's fascinating about Lawrence Kotlikoff, who is coming up in just a moment here on America Trends Podcast, and he is a professor at Boston University, what's fascinating is that at the same time that he's telling us that we're in such macro debt as a society, he's also mindful of the fact that if you're an individual, you've got to get what's yours from Social Security. So he wrote the definitive book with other friends of his about what it is that you need to do to max out your Social Security. A remarkable book that's gotten a lot of attention. And he's also got all kinds of tools online to help you with your Social Security. And he now has written about this new plan to help you maximize your retirement by using an economist guide, not a financial planner, not somebody who's got other credentials, but how an economist looks at it. And he says that he can really help us to improve our situation as it relates to retirement.
Wow. I'll have to read that book.
But, yeah, no, absolutely. I think we all need to. But what I find interesting is that while he's concerned on the macro level about the amount of debt we have in America, he's still not turning his eye away from what we as individuals on the micro level need to do to maximize Social Security benefits. And by the way, he reminds us that Social Security is not an easy system to understand. It's just like I just went on Medicare.
Right, right.
I admitted that. Did I admit that publicly?
You admit that. Yes, you did.
Oh, my goodness. I did.
Ooh.
And I've got to tell you, I know people talk about a single-payer system, and they all point to Medicare for all. But Medicare is not a single-payer system. If it's a single-payer system, why do I have Original, like Kentucky Fried Chicken, right. The original Medicare.
Right.
Why do I have A for hospital, B for doctors and other
exactly.
providers, a supplemental plan that pays the 20%, a prescription plan to another insurance company,
right.
if this is all single payer?
And it's very complicated for old people.
Exactly. No, it is. No, it really is.
It is.
So Medicare is very complicated, but so is Social Security. So at the same time that he's telling us that we're broke, he's telling us we're as bankrupt as Greece, if not more. Then he's also telling us, but hey, when in Rome or when in Greece, just take it. And so he's telling us how to maximize our Social Security and to build a pile for retirement. And I got to tell you that most people are not ready. John, they are not ready for retirement. We talked to Bob Powell about this some time back, and that's still available to you here on America Trends Podcast. But there are so many facts that are stunning about the American public when it comes to money. Did you know that about one in four of us, that's 25%, of course, literally have no emergency savings?
That's scary. That's scary.
I mean, what happens if your car breaks down? Yeah. Or if your home needs a new oil burner, what do you do?
Yeah, well, that's bad.
And, you know, I was talking in another segment about people more worried about their next vacation than about saving for retirement.
Right, right.
And so people have their priorities just a little askew.
Even when I was working with the big companies, a lot of people weren't taking the company's money for the match. They weren't putting money in their 401k to take the 5% for free.
Well, they'll tell you that's the worst thing you can do. When somebody's willing to give you free money
right.
that won't be taxed until you're 70 and a half, I mean, please.
I mean, I was shocked by people who wouldn't do that.
They or feel, if you match it dollar for dollar or whatever,
you're
getting 100% return. Millions of us hide money from our spouses and partners. I was just reading a new study. You don't do that.
No.
Does she do that to you?
No.
Okay. No, we don't do that. Everything's on the table.
It's always been.
Both hands
yes.
on the table. And sometimes we're told, and I was surprised at this a little bit, but maybe not, because I prioritize bills. But they say we prioritize paying the wrong bills first. When we can't pay all of our bills, we make very bad choices as to the ones that we do pay. So we let the mortgage and the car payment go while we're paying for that
right.
bottle of whatever
right,
it may
or the
be.
Credit cards,
so
right.
we've got it all backwards when it comes to handling our bills.
You got to keep the lights on and the rents paid before you.
Yeah, you want to see what you're drinking. And then do you know that we have racked up about $1 trillion in credit card debt?
Yeah.
And that's just a fraction of what we owe. So Americans are in deep trouble. And Lawrence Kotlikoff wants to help us. Now, we're going to talk to him about a little bit of all of this smorgasbord. We'll talk a little macro. We'll talk a little micro. And you're going to come away a lot more informed about your own personal finances and the terrible state of the American financial debt, and it's something that you've got to hear. We've got to hear it.
Yeah, we got to hear it right now.
Because the politicians
no.
are not telling us about this.
No, it's scary.
All right. Well, let's go to Lawrence Kotlikoff.
On the line with us is Lawrence Kotlikoff, and I've talked to him so many times in the past. He's a distinguished Boston University economics professor, author of the bestseller Get What's Yours for Social Security. And I've got to say that, Lawrence, you talk so brilliantly about both macroeconomics and microeconomics, and we're going to talk about both, primarily microeconomics. What excites you more, talking about people and their personal finances or the state of our debt and obligations in America?
Well, I think I get more upset about the macro picture because it's so clear that we have are putting our kids at major risk when it comes to the fiscal situation. The country is dead broke, far beyond anything the members of Congress or the president have suggested, because most of the debts are kept off the books just with fancy language, just like Enron did routinely in its accounting. We have all kinds of obligations like Social Security benefit payments, for example, which are not recorded as obligations of the government. And so anyway, so the true debt is something like $206 trillion. We're measuring something like $20 trillion. So we're not even in the ballpark.
Oh, I know. And
go ahead.
Well, people are so stunned when they hear the number 20 trillion. And whenever I hear that number, I think about you. I think about the fiscal gap. I think about the way that you tell us that things are kept off the books. And if we're stunned at 20 trillion, we've got to be floored and devastated and left really with no hope at 200 trillion.
Oh, yeah. Well, there is hope, but we have to radically reform Social Security, and not in 10 years or not gradually. It has to be done immediately. We have to fix our tax system immediately, and we have to fix our healthcare system immediately. And we can do all this without pulling the rug out from other people, from people. We can do it by giving, you know, with giving everybody a basic healthcare plan. And I'm not talking about socialized medicine. I'm talking about a competitive system. So I've written about this at length. If you go to my website, kotlikoff.net, there's a book called You're Hired, which is a book I wrote for President Trump, not on his request, but just on my own. I said, well, now we have this new president. Let me write what I think he should do. And so there's plans for fixing, very simple plans for fixing health care, Social Security, the tax system, the banking system, the education system, the immigration issues. And also there's discussion of foreign policy. So I think if he were to follow what was there, we'd be in much better shape. But nothing that I'm proposing is happening or being discussed.
Yeah, do you see anybody talking about debt? Of course, you've kept it in front of us. You've gotten many other distinguished economists to sign on and to do full-page ads in the New York Times. Peter Peterson, he's talked about it. Tom Coburn, to some extent. But it has fallen off of the public radar.
Yeah, it's like, it's not fashionable to worry about our kids, whether it's climate change. You know, suddenly yesterday it was a problem for our kids. Today, somehow it's not a problem in the minds of a lot of people. But it is a problem. It's a potential disaster that we're setting up for our kids. If it's not a for sure thing, it's a risk, a major risk that we have to address to make sure our kids are safe. And same thing with the fiscal problems. Same thing with North Korea developing nuclear weapons. These are major risks that we're going to leave to our kids if we don't deal with them. So adults I define as people take care of their kids. And I haven't seen much adult leadership down there in Washington.
Explain to people what a fiscal gap is, because as much as you say we can remedy this, first of all, you've got to have the political will, and you have to have an understanding, and I don't think a lot of politicians really do. But I read where you had said at one point, and this goes back about a year, that we would need an immediate 58.5% increase in all federal taxes, or a 37.7% permanent across-the-board decrease in federal spending. So it doesn't sound that easy to me.
Yeah, those numbers are slightly better. It's a 53% tax hike, or roughly a 32% spending cut. And so the fiscal gap is putting everything on the books. It's saying, look, all these obligations to pay for defense into the future, pay for Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, the president's lunch, all these golf trips, all the Social Security detail, the security details, all that has to be paid for. So we've got, and it's not just going to be this year, it's going to be three times. So let's project that, and the Congressional Budget Office projects this stuff forward. And then we have all the taxes that we can project forward, and we can take the value in the present of all these spending obligations and compare them with the present value of all the taxes and see what the gap is. And the gap is $206 trillion. And it's it shows that the country is, and that's about 10 times GDP, an annual year of all, in other words, all the output is only about $20 trillion this year, the value of all the goods and services we produce. And we owe 10 years of output. So the country is flat broke, I mean, beyond belief. beyond anything that Greece is facing or Italy or Russia. And I'm not the only economist who believes that we should. And economic theory is very clear that this is the only cogent accounting to do, fiscal accounting, because it has the property that if you change how you call things, what words you use, it doesn't change the number. The $206 trillion stays $206 trillion. So if I say that, if I come to you this year as Uncle Sam, I say, look, I'm taking money from you, and I'm going to promise to pay it back to you. It doesn't matter for the fiscal gap whether I say that I'm borrowing money and I'm going to pay you back principal plus interest in the future, or if I say that I'm taxing you now and I'm going to make a transfer payment to you in the future. That choice of language makes all the difference in the world to the official deficit, what's put on the books, but it makes no difference to the fiscal gap. So this is why if you go to the informact.org, T-H-E-I-N-F-O-R-M-A-C-T, theinformact.org, you'll see that 19 Nobel Prize winners in economics and over 3,000, I think over, that's probably about 1,300 economists from every top institution as well as places you never heard of, small schools, they've endorsed fiscal gap accounting. And there's a bill called the Inform Act, which Senator Thune and Tim Kaine, who ran as vice president with Clinton, these two Republican and Democrats endorsed or sponsored a bill called the Inform Act. And it hasn't been passed, but it would require, if it were passed, it would require the CBO and OMB and GAO to do fiscal gap accounting on a routine basis. So we're hiding the facts from ourselves, our kids, because Congress doesn't want this publicly known. Neither party wants to say that they are destroying our kids' future, economic futures. Regardless of whether we get the economy to grow at a faster rate or not, if you start raising taxes to the level that's needed to cover the spending, you're going to devastate the economy and kids will leave the country. Or if you start cutting, I mean, imagine cutting my mom's Social Security checks, monthly checks, she's 98, by 32%. I mean,
now these things are unfathomable for politicians, right. But it would seem as if somebody who came in from outside of Washington, like Donald Trump, and who said, I'm going to drain the swamp, I'm going to be more honest with you, I am going to let you know the problems that we have. Has he shown any inclination to begin to look at the numbers more realistically?
Donald Trump seems to have an attention span of about 2 seconds. He seems to have no real knowledge of any policy issue. I don't think he really cares about policy. I don't sense that, you know, he'd like everybody to love him and be better off and happy. And he just thinks that his presence is going to make this happen on its own. But you need to know what you're doing. You know, if you're engaged in heart surgery, you better have studied some heart surgery, you know, done it a few times. And when it comes to economic policy, if you haven't really immersed yourself in that for years, you don't know what you're doing. And that's very clear in what he has said about the tax reform bill that the House has and is endorsing the health care bill, which is a god-awful bill that could put 23 million people out of health insurance. But we need to fix health insurance fundamentally, and you need to understand what's the right way, and you need to have the courage to say, look, even if the politicians aren't coming along, I'm going to at least enunciate the right answer. And in this case, I think, just to be clear what the right answer is for health care, it's, you know, Bernie Sanders has this proposal. It's called Medicare for All, but that's not going to really work, I don't think. It's going to be far too expensive. It takes us to more or less a British-type national health service. Unless I'm misreading Senator Sanders' proposal, but what we do need is Medicare Part C for All, which is the Republican part of Medicare. It's the Republican version of Medicare, which about a 30% of Medicare participants are in.
What is called Medicare Advantage?
Medicare Advantage. And what I'm saying is that everybody in the country should be in that program. And everybody should, in effect, get a voucher that's paid to their insurance company that gives the insurance company the money to cover them for the year. And these vouchers that Medicare Part C is already providing are based on your pre-existing conditions. So if you've got diabetes, your insurance company, if you choose an Advantage plan with, let's say, Kaiser, they're going to get a bigger check for you than if you don't have diabetes. And that gets rid of the cherry picking. So it's exactly the right answer for getting rid of the cherry picking, which has plagued the whole market. And then the insurance company is on the line to take care of us, but also they realize that if they overprovide, it's going to cost them on the bottom line. They're not going to get any more money. So they get all the incentives right. So if we had Medicare Part C for all, for a basic insurance plan for everybody, and then people that could afford it could buy supplemental coverage, we would have an answer to our problem. We'd have the government operating with a global health care budget, and we would get everybody covered, and then we'd use an efficient tax system to cover the cost. And there could also be deductibles that are reasonable and co-insurance so that people have some incentives to not overuse the system. But I haven't seen that, I think what is happening right now is that people are being forced to pay for a lot of things out of pocket. For example, my own health insurance used to be I didn't have to pay much of anything. Now I have to pay the first $6,000. So if I have something that the doctor wants me to do, I don't get to negotiate. He says, go to this guy and have that procedure, have that CAT scan or that MRI. I don't get a chance to say, well, I'd like to go to this to a different provider and pay less because it's coming out of my pocket. It's not working that way. So this idea of treating the health insurance market as if it's a regular market for, let's say, automobile repair, it's not a standard market.
I understand.
So I think,
Go on. Go on.
Well, I think we need to have economists involved in policymaking here and nonpartisan economists, and that's why I wrote this book, You're Hired, at kotlikoff.net. So anybody who's really upset about the direction of policy, I would say read that book and send copies to every member of Congress and to the White House, so bombard them with send 1,000 copies, and maybe Trump could read one if he has the time, take a few hours off of his golf game.
When did you start talking about the fiscal gap in the United States? How many years has it been that you've sent up all the flares?
It's been like 40 years. I'm 66. Pretty much right after graduate school. So maybe about 35, 38 years.
And I also, I read that you said if we wait another 30 years, it's going to require 77% tax increase or 46.5% cut in spending. My question is, when is it that we begin to address these issues, and why is it that we haven't seen a headline? As I recall, and it was attributed, I think, to Mao, that sometimes nothing happens for decades, and then sometimes decades happen overnight. And that happened in 2008 with the bubble when it burst. I mean, when is this going to come to a head?
Yeah, it's like a slowly growing cancer, and all of a sudden, from one day to the next, an organ is attacked and doesn't function. And then you realize you've got cancer. So we keep going along and keep moving money from one fund to another, keep changing words, not fundamentals. And then at some point, there's really big cuts in Social Security benefits or major tax hikes, and people realize that that there's a problem. But the real problem is doing too little too late. If you look at Argentina, a century ago, it had the same per capita GDP as not as the U.S., but it was like the fifth highest per capita GDP. It's now back to being a developing country because they were basically fiscally irresponsible, and from one political administration to the next, and over time, the set of policies, sequence of policies, drove the country's economy down the tubes. So they're sitting there with permanently high tax rates and poor incentives to invest and to work, and a much lower level per capita GDP than they should have had. So, you know, bad policy has real impacts and can bring a country down. I think what we're doing is we're on a slow path to nowhere, unfortunately. But I do want to tell people in this podcast just briefly about...
I want to get to that, but I want to ask you, in the context of these macro problems that we have, how should those of us who are aware of the real severity of the issue, and many people are totally unaware, and they can't really even begin to imagine what these numbers mean to them individually. I mean, what comfort should they take in their own ability on a micro level to manage their finances in a way better than many in our society do when they see these problems that are looming on a macro level?
Yeah, it's very hard to hedge a future tax hike. You know, you can try and sell long-term bonds short, for example, because the government's likely to print a lot of money. Some people would argue that they've been printing a lot of money in recent years to pay for their bills. So we could, I think, expect inflation, expect interest rates to go up, long-term rates. So one way to try and hedge what the government situation is to sell long-term bonds short. And there is actually, I think, a mutual fund that does that, so you can actually do it safely without any, you know, risk beyond what you invest. But apart from that, I don't know what you can do except really work on your members of Congress to pay attention, to read. You know, the book's right there. Everybody's these days a megaphone, and they can take your hire and send it to everybody on their mailing list, ask them to send it, email list. It's a PDF. It's a free PDF. They can just forward it all around the country, and that might matter.
All right. Well, let's talk about these microfinances. As much as our finances for our nation have been mismanaged, I'm reading the latest study that is going to be no surprise to you that about one in four literally have no emergency savings, and that people oftentimes are saving for the wrong things, and they're not looking at retirement. They're looking at the next vacation. So, I mean, does that concern you, just the habits of those of us here on a personal basis?
Yeah, it concerns me quite a bit, and I write about public personal finance all the time. We have a lot of people that are under-saving, under-insuring, that seem to have blinders on and not want to look at their future. So I've, through my company, produced a program called Maxify Planner. We just released it about a month ago. It's at Maxify Planner, planner.com. So it's a $99 program, software program. This program does two very cool things. First of all, it's extremely user-friendly. It kind of looks like, plays like TurboTax. So every question is one by one, and, you know, your hand is being held the whole way through. And the two cool things are, first of all, it figures out how much you should spend this year and every year in the future so that you can have the same living standard through time. Mm-hmm. And by living standard, I mean the level of your discretionary spending per household member. The program takes into account all your off-the-top expenses, like on tuition or mortgage payments. But your spending money, you'd really like to maintain that at a reasonable level through time. And the program does that. It's an annual budgeting program, and figuring out that spending level that's appropriate and the saving that goes along with it and how much life insurance you should buy, very complicated calculation because there are so many factors, moving parts that are interconnected, like taxes, federal and state, and every year in the future, Medicare Part B premiums, inflation factors into all this. So it's all interconnected, and the program has very powerful math and algorithms to figure this all out in about a half a second. And then the second really cool thing that this program does is it figures out how to raise your living standard safely by maximizing over your Social Security benefit collection decisions, your retirement account decisions, like how much to put into your retirement account, whether to use a Roth or not, whether to when to take the money out, whether to take the Roth money out first or second, and also whether or not to take the money out in the form of an annuity, which is money that comes to you if you're alive, but if you die, you don't get anything back. So it's moving money from the state or the situation in which you don't need it when you're dead to the situation where you do need it when you're alive. So these things can be very powerful ways to raise your living standard significantly. Now, obviously, if you have just Social Security to live on, there's not much you can do. You have to take it probably as early as possible, which is 62 if we're talking about retirement benefits. And but if you have the option of working longer, if you have the option of you know, taking Social Security at 70 when it's 76% higher than it is at 62 after inflation, maybe using your retirement accounts or earnings that you can come up with, or remortgaging your house, all that, all those things that can get, if they can get yourself by to age 70 and get this much higher number from Social Security, that can be part and parcel of a much higher lifetime living standard. So almost every household can get something from this program, whether it's $10,000 or $100,000 or $300,000. It's really a money magic machine. I call this money magic because it's safe ways of finding higher spending capacity. And it, and the program can be used for by young and middle-aged people. Think about somebody who's young is thinking about, should I become a plumber or a doctor? Well, you can look at all the costs associated with being a doctor, tuition, and the fact that you wouldn't start earning money till, you know, whatever, 12 years from now versus going into plumbing right away, you can figure out whether your lifetime spending is higher or lower. I'm not saying that if you're dying to be a doctor, you should give that up. But if you're really indifferent, you're, you know, yeah, between being a doctor and a plumber and other, and you're really just focused on the money, this program can figure out what's going to give you a higher living standard if things turn out the way you assume. Or take switching jobs. Suppose you're 35 and you've got an offer at a job in Seattle. You live in Kansas City. This job in Seattle pays more, but housing prices are higher. And also, there's no state income tax in Seattle and Washington State, but there is one in Missouri. And the 401k plans are quite different. How do you figure out which is going to produce a higher living standard? The program can do that for you.
Okay, so this is the first retirement planning software, you say, that's been built by economists. What is it that the financial planners and the mutual fund companies and others that people have gone to for these planners in the past, what is it that they've missed that you've been able to include?
Well, they're really focused on product sales. So they built financial software that helps people buy their, or leads people to buy their products. They're not really focused on giving appropriate advice. So they're trying to come up with tools that will lead to people to buy more than they really need and also put themselves at more risk than they should. So the traditional methodology is that they, all the software except for ours that's out there, ask the household how much they want to spend in retirement. And if you think about it, it's a ridiculous question. I would like to spend in retirement is $1 billion a day. We can't spend more than we can afford. So rather than really figuring out what they can spend, which is what we do on an even keel, they say, okay, look, you can't figure it out. You're throwing your hands up. Let's just use the industry standard, the 80% replacement rate. we're going to have you target to spend 80% of your pre-retirement income. Now, that target is made up by the industry, and it's miles too high for most households. And so then the next thing in this kind of bait-and-switch routine is that they tell the household, gee, you're not saving enough to meet that target given how you're investing, but if you invest in our high-yield mutual funds, the probability of making your target is much higher. Suddenly it becomes your target. They've slipped from it being an industry standard to your target anyway. So now your probability is higher, but the probability of you're losing your shirt is also higher, and they don't tell you that. And they also they don't tell you too much about all the fees you're going to pay in these high-yield funds. So that's the game that's being played. If you go to an insurance company for financial planning, they're going to be focused on getting you into annuities because they can make money on those products. If you go to a mutual fund company, they're going to tell you that annuities are a bad deal, that you're going to die before you collect the money to get paid back. But annuities are an insurance mechanism to insure you against living to 100 or even later. So the mutual fund industry, when they focus on your life expectancy, and if you go to Fidelity's website, for example, and you look at how they talk about Social Security and your retirement, it's all about life expectancy. Mm-hmm. That's about as inappropriate as possible. So I think that Fidelity and TIAA-CREF, AARP, these companies that have T. Rowe Price, they have these quick and dirty calculators. They have this focus on life expectancy. It's all inappropriate. It's all malfeasance, financial malfeasance. They should be kept prevented from providing financial advice because they're conflicted. They're not providing honest, appropriate, independent advice. But I don't see that, you know, this administration is probably going to go down as the most corrupt in history, given just how the president's interacting with his businesses and using his position to make money for himself and his family. So I don't see this president as being concerned about personal financial advice.
Well, the fiduciary rules, of course, that were meant to strengthen the commitment that these companies have to us rather than to their products is something in question. Well, it is called the MaxiFiPlanner.com, and this is Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff. In closing today, we've talked about the macroeconomics. We've talked a bit about microeconomics. Social Security itself, if we could wrap that into one package, you're an expert on that. You have that bestseller, Get What's Yours, for Social Security. Tell us what it is that is still available to us in terms of things that we don't know about, because you remind us the system is complicated, and whether, in fact, this system as a microcosm of the public debt that we have is something that we can rely on going forward as part of that retirement plan.
Yeah, well, the system is really, Social Security by itself is in far worse shape than the Detroit pensions were when they took the city of Detroit into bankruptcy. At a personal level, there are lots of things you can do to try and maximize your lifetime Social Security benefits. And our software, Maxify Planner, or we have a standalone program called MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. All our software programs are at EconomicSecurityPlanning.com. That's the main website. But, you know, just at a personal level, if you're patient and you can wait till 70 to take your retirement benefit, much bigger check you'll get every month. It's a great and that check's going to continue until you die. So Social Security is effective giving us an option to buy more annuity insurance from the government. And there's also people in their about 64, 65, 66 who are still able to collect a full spousal benefit on their spouse under the grandfathering provisions of the new Social Security law that was passed in 2015. So our software figures out if they are eligible, and there's probably, you know, 6 million people in this boat where they can collect maybe $50,000, $60,000 at the most for free, in effect, over the next four or so years if they play their cards right, in addition to their retirement benefits. So there are still things, and, you know, if you're a widow and you're age 60, you have to decide whether to take your widow's benefit first or your retirement benefit first. You don't want to take the two at the same time because one will wipe out the other, but what you want to do is take one and let the other one grow. That's a very tricky question and requires the right software to answer it. So for every household, since there are about 12 benefits, it's not open and shut exactly what to do. You need sophisticated software that can run through 30 or 40,000 cases in a half a minute, and or actually a half a second, and really figure out what's appropriate for you, what's best.
And some of the methods that you've got in your new software, you owe to aerospace engineering actual rocket science. Just briefly explain that, and then we will let you go.
Oh, sure. Well, the mathematics and computer algorithms that we're using here, we don't really owe them to anybody in the aerospace industry. There was a mathematician named Richard Bellman who developed a technique in the 1950s called dynamic programming. And we teach dynamic programming to our grad students in economics in their first year. So everybody in economics knows about dynamic programming. We all use it for solving different kinds of problems that we then take to the data. So we produce models, take to the data, use computers to help solve the models and estimate their coefficients or parameters using the data so that we can answer economic questions. Now, what I did is I looked at, and this dynamic programming is being used by the aerospace industry to direct rockets into space to go to certain locations like the moon or certain planets. So in that sense, the software that we have, MaxDefy Planner, it's using dynamic programming. Since dynamic programming is being used in rocket science, you can say that we've got rocket science under our hood. But we have a special version of dynamic programming, which is called iterative dynamic programming. We actually have three different dynamic programs talking with each other, passing data back and forth to converge on the right answer, because there's lots of chicken and egg problems here where something like, you know, your spending depends on your taxes, but your taxes depend on your spending. So you have to have the things be mutually consistent. So I figured out a technique for having these different dynamic programs talk to each other. Without that technique, for which we got a patent, the program would take years to solve for one case. Now it can run in a half a second. So I think actually the aerospace industry could learn a little bit from our software.
Okay. Well, listen, Professor, I want to thank you so much for being with us and really running the gamut with us to explain where we are as a nation and where we should be as individual earners, savers, and retirees. I thank you so much for coming by today on AmericaTrendsPodcast.com.
Love to do this, and let's do it again soon.
All right. Thank you so much.
If you like this episode of America Trends Podcast, will you please leave us a kind rating or a review on iTunes? John, is that too much to ask?
No, or even a comment. Give us in the comment section on the ones that you liked. And, you know, you can also email me at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. And that's another way you can contact us with your ideas.
Don't forget, your review really is important to us. And, John, they may say, why? Why? Why is it so important? Well, the more
why?
Why? Well, the more you like us, the better placement we get, which then helps us improve our rankings and visibility so that more people can enjoy us. And the more people, John, you see how this is spiraling?
It's getting out of control.
The more people who know about us and like our content, the greater chance we have to encourage advertisers to hop aboard. You see how it works now, John?
I understand now. That's very interesting.
And we don't want these folks who are listening to miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. I mean, we're recording tons of them, aren't we?
No, and they're all very interesting, and we got some really good stuff coming up.
Oh, we really do. But we want you to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com. And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms is @TrendsPodcast. We want to thank you personally for subscribing. In fact, John may have a very beautiful thank you gift. John, what is it? No? Ran out of them?
All out of gifts.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
sorry
please,
about that.
Please send us your ideas and questions for future episodes and topics on America Trends Podcast. We can't think of them all, right, John?
That's right.
I mean, my head's already exploding.
Oh, yes.
You see it? Cloud above. Is there an author you'd love to hear from? Or a subject you'd like to learn more about, send us your ideas on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or use hashtag Trends Podcast. You can also add an email address if you have one that you want to give out. And we do not, right, John? We don't share our list.
No spamming, no list getting out. You just get our newsletter.
Absolutely. And you can access our full show archive on our website at americatrendspodcast.com. For more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on our upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. Oh, by the way, and John, this is really important, and you know.
What is it?
Well, if you buy from Amazon, we have joined their associates program. So you go to americatrendspodcast.com before you purchase, and you click over to Amazon from our Amazon store.
That's a very good point, because it doesn't cost them any more money to do that.
No, that's all built in.
And then we get a few pesos.
Yeah, but
keeping the podcast going.
You know, if we get a small VIG, you know, 2 or 3%, if you don't do it through us, you're just giving more money to Jeff Bezos.
Exactly.
And he doesn't need any more money.
He doesn't need it. That's
and he doesn't
correct.
Do any podcasts, I don't think. So please, with no added cost to you, it helps us to bring you the content that you're enjoying. And thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Please keep listening.